It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, we've never had one of these before, but courtesy of Lee in New York, a preemptive complaint. Note, sent before airtime. Hey, Bob, stop telling us you can't turn up the volume.
Huh? What'd you say? I can't make it out, huh?
That may be the earliest cowbell in Horn Family Community Congregation history. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Thank you, Lee. That was a beautiful start for the program. I don't know how we're going to top that, but we'll certainly try. I think I've got halfway decent levels going here. And, well, as such, we'll just see where the program takes us. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. It's about 2 minutes past the hour on this, the 23rd day of August 2018, and it is a thorn in the side Thursday. Well, maybe the thorns aren't mine this week. Maybe the thorn, almost dare to say that Julius Geezer has, grabbed a bouquet of roses by the stem. Stems, yeah. And, you know, I mentioned something the other day. Hey, look, we are moderate. By the way, if you go to HeadOn.live and you want to take part in the madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that happens in the chat room every evening while the program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, well, by Jove, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and the early arrivers will greet you there. And I'm tickled pink to say that we are moderated this evening by longtime inveterate, by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, who I think is moderating from the cool, air-conditioned comfort of his recliner while experiencing a medication regimen. Yes. Because technology, whether it be medical technology or communications technology, well, it keeps miniaturizing and miniaturizing and miniaturizing. By the way, after the preemptive complaint, Lee does tell us it sounds good to me on HeadOn.live. Scott in San Diego, sound levels are spiffy on White Rose and HeadOn.live. I tuned in a wee bit late, so I missed Lee's cowbell-worthy comment. What was it? Oh, don't start, you people. I tuned in late. What did I miss, man? The story of the program so far. Go to the chat room and ask somebody to fill you in, Scott, for God's sakes. It's one of those jokes that's funny once. And yes, Brother Deacon Asa, who knows better than who knows all, sees all, tells occasionally, says both streams are hot. So thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Anyway, we're moderated this evening by Steve from Georgistan, and come on by, fill up the chat room. I mean, there's no upper limit, and let the merriment be madcap. Okay. So at the beginning of every program, we extend thanks because we have subscribers whose monthly help arrives at times when the program's not on the air. So I want to make sure that I do get those thank yous out. And that being the case, let's see here. That being the case, we say thank you to our old buddy Philip in Maryland and to Stacy in PA. Thank you. We say thanks to Carl there in Ohio. And we say thanks to Joyce in Washington. Those are our subscribers for the 23rd day of the month. I also have thanks to extend to Jake in Columbus. Thank you very kindly, Jake, who says, I'm taking the plunge now that the lake done dried up. I know how that feels, bud. But thank you very kindly. Jake did a year's subscription in a day because of the fundraising troubles we've been having. Basically since I got back from Netroots Nation. But I can happily report with all of that taken together, we've knocked down Larry from Liberalville's nightly challenges, and two, we're only a day behind in fundraising now. So while it is true that if we don't get the fundraising done by Friday, there won't be a program on Monday, not by my choice, it's also true that we've now only got $400 to finish to finish for this evening and $600 to finish the week. And then by Jove, how about that? We will we'll have fundraising free radio all next week. And won't that be fun? And thanks very kindly to Steve in New York, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, for getting us started this evening. We've got $390 to go and $590 to go to finish the week, so that hopefully we won't, and if we knock down the four this evening, we don't have to worry about it. It's just an ordinary fundraising day tomorrow, and no miracles to sweat out, and wouldn't that be lovely? So the usual information applies. If you want to help out, run over to headon.live. There's a PayPal. There's a PayPal interface there. You can do it one time, or you can click that little box and join Joyce and Philip and Carl as subscribers for the 23rd day of the month. If you'd prefer to do Patreon, some do. That all comes out on the first day of the month, and that's for the previous month. In other words, what comes out on September 1 is for August, what comes out on October 1 is for September, and that's how that works. So jump in at your leisure and at your pleasure, and know that you're helping to make sure that there's that there are 5 days of fundraising free broadcasting and that there's a horn at all. Period. Next week. Thank you very, very, very kindly. So that pretty much takes care of all of that. The mailing address, if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, the mailing address, as do friends of ours like Tom in the Bay Area, and Dennis and Brandon in Brooklyn, longtime supporters of the program. The mailing address is on the website, but here it is anyway, in case you want to jot it down or you just like to hear me say it. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. I'm sorry, I can't pray in tongues for you or anything, or warn you that witches are coming after the Horn. Well, I mean, I guess we could. Because witches, well, of the very secular and financial type, but yeah, okay, I guess. Before we get into the increasingly awful days of Donald J. Trump, because that eats up so much of our broadcast time, I want to give you a little bit of an update. Agnes heard the audio last night that I played. You remember, after we had, what was his name? Reverend John Kilpatrick of the In His Presence Church. By His Presence Church. By His Presence Church. Down in Daphne, Alabama. We heard him talking about the voices that he hears and conveying the messages of the voices that he hears. Because, after all, it was prayer meeting Wednesday. Then, just for comparison and contrast purposes, and with an additional side of this is what happens in a country that really doesn't give much a damn about access to health care for its citizenry, I played you some audio of a woman who was obviously badly in need of medical attention, both physically and from a mental health standpoint. I did not do so for purposes of mockery, nor did I do so for purposes of sensationalism. But I did so because she was babbling, and I don't use that as a pejorative term. She was babbling about religious issues the same way the guy in Daphne, Alabama did. The only difference being the guy in Daphne, Alabama was doing it in a $1,000 suit and wiping his face with a silk hanky and had an audio-visual band set up behind him that would make Pink Floyd blush. Well, when I got done with the program, and Agnes and I had settled in to wrap up our day, she said, "I want to see the video of the woman on the street." And again, she didn't want to see it for purposes of mockery or sensationalism. My beloved Agnes sat, and she'll probably castigate me for this, she wept. She wept to behold the anguish of that tormented human being. And she insisted on playing it back two or three times. Because the more she listened and the more closely she listened, the more she realized that what sounded like babbling madness actually had some context to it and had content to it. And upon two or three listens, it became obvious that the woman had been deeply immersed in some religious process. And that, as is the case, when you take someone who is when you take someone who may be mentally fragile in the first place, and then douse them real good in fundamentalist religion, well, basically you're mixing, I don't know, Clorox and ammonia in a bathtub, and the fumes will get you, no doubt about it. And one of the more interesting things I found about this, and you can go back to the recording of the previous program and compare. At one point in time, and it's sort of like a social archaeology of sound. At one point in the recording, the woman says she's a little girl and she likes to have sex. And that's because she had sex in the womb, and I had sex in the womb, too. And the womb is a sacred place. Well, those were all, as they would say, in a gambling hell somewhere, those were all tells. The woman's mind had been twisted, among other things, by the messaging and the propagandization that comes from the toxic fetus fetish movement. And then there was one more that really dinged me. Or the thing that really grabbed me was the line about babies having sex in the womb. Because when you do this sort of thing, you develop a memory for stories. And I heard that, and way back in the distance and the spider webs and the foggy spaces of my memory, I heard something go ting. And for people who don't know and who don't follow the toxicity of the American right wing, that just sounded like more crazy talk. And I only use that as a shorthand label. I intend no disrespect. But you just hear it and you go, my goodness. But if you are a listener to this program, if you've been a member of this community for more than 5 years or so, you might have even recognized it too. Because it was in 2013 when another member of the what was then referred to as the Tea Party movement, a bagger, they would morph into the maggots. With almost no effort whatsoever. And the teabagger movement would morph into the freedom carcass. Back in about, June of 2013, when the baggers really had the bit in their teeth, they introduced one of their, oh my God, are we going to have to go through this again? Fetal pain bills. The theory being that a little lump of cells, undifferentiated cells, can not only play four-handed canasta, but also feel pain. It's wacky. It is nonsensical, it's non-scientific, and thus it is par for the course for the fetus fetish movement in the American racist white wing. And I found it. It was about June of 2013 when a member of the House of Representatives, I think from either the 24th or the 26th Congressional District of Texas, a guy by the name of Michael Burgess. I'm pulling this all out of memory now. I don't have the device at hand that I actually pulled it up on. A guy named Michael Burgess, who is some kind of wackadoodle OBGYN, commented in regard to that fetal pain bill that fetuses masturbate in the womb. No, really. And it caused enough Sturm und Drang that it sort of bubbled to the surface of the news cycle. And that was, you know, that was back when the news cycle was more than 10 minutes in duration. That was back when the news cycle could sometimes last as long as 24 or maybe even 48 hours. And of course, his assertion was quickly determined and proven to be the utter horseshit that it was the moment that it exited the horse's anus that was this right wing, and he's still in the congressman's mouth. It would be nice to see this guy go bye bye in a blue wave, but I don't know that much about either the 24th congressional district of Texas. I don't know that much about it. It's probably a bunch of McMansions surrounded by oil wells or something. But that told me that this young woman, because she was young, and along the way she mentioned the names of three little children that she said would be saved. And I don't mean for any of this to get all Alex Jones. And I don't think this had, I know this didn't, because it's bullshit, this didn't have anything to do with QAnon. But she later went on to talk about how she broke the old covenant, but that she had grace coming to her and mercy under the new covenant. And she was spouting information that was lodged in her brain from 5 years, 5 years, 5 years and a couple of months previously. And I realized that she had been likely been subjected to some level of abuse. At the hands of the fetishized, mollycoddled, white-wing religion hate industry. And it wasn't so much my realization as Agnes's. As she sat there and said, "Oh, Bob, somebody's, those people in some church somewhere have hurt this woman badly." And it was kind of a reminder, and a timely one at that, that there's far more harm done by religious institutions in this country than we're even talking about within the context of, say, the grand jury report that came out of the grand jury in Pennsylvania regarding the Roman Catholic Church. Much more harm. And in point of fact, that the harm extends far beyond sexual abuse to include mental and emotional abuse. I guess it's neither here nor there. We found out later that the police had showed up and taken this woman into custody somehow or another. Whether they even listened to the stuff that she was babbling, or realized that crimes were very well have been committed against this woman. Well, I couldn't find anything in any of the news anywhere, and the video had gotten probably 80,000 views, but it wasn't popping up in any news stories anywhere. But it was sort of a reminder that you have to pay close attention, and if you do, you'll hear the clues of just how much wickedness really is afoot in this country, and not wickedness occasioned by any sort of imaginary crap flowing out of the of sewers like that maintained by Alex Jones. And that in turn, turning now to Geezer Disgustus, oh, wow, wait a minute. That's just a nice note. Hung Like Jesus says, Bob, I couldn't wait to get back here today. It seems that there are only a few places to go to escape the insanity that bombards one during the course of the day. I am literally exhausted. I know the feeling. And so many of you say the very same thing. And they talk, and you talk about what a haven this community is. And that moves me and inspires me and reminds me, even in the toughest times, of the wonder of this community that you, not I, have built. And to the extent that Hung Like Jesus is grateful, I am too. I so very am. So to turn this thing a little more toward, to take this back toward the ringside seat to the Trumpian shit show that we are trapped in these days. Okay, well, that makes sense. Thanks for doing the ad hoc research department of the Horn Family Community Congregation has been helmed at this point by Lee in New York, who says the 2018 Cook Partisan Voter Index for the Texas 24th Congressional District is R+9, meaning that in the previous two presidential elections, that district's results were 9 percentage points more Republican than the national average. That made the 24th Congressional District the 150th most Republican district nationally. Thank you, Lee. So that means it's probably an uphill battle to get the guy who thinks that little fetuses are out there pounding the Pudnik in the womb out of office. That doesn't mean we do not try. So anyway, to turn this thing back toward the Trumpian shit show, apparently somebody gave Julius Geezer one Diet Coke too many, or else at this point they've got him so medicated to the gills that he doesn't know day from night, and that's entirely a possibility. But after midnight this morning, he was up and tweeting. No collusion, total witch hunt. And notice how, again, to sort of use by example, the stuff that the poor woman had hung on to for half a decade in her tormented mind. Look how this stuff transfers. Look at the transferability that it has. Donald Trump screams witch hunt, witch hunt, witch hunt, witch hunt for months, and eventually some hustler, huckster, preacher decides it's time to cash in. And he tries to prove that there are real, honest-to-badness witches out there chasing after the president. I
I'll grab you, my pretty. And your little melanoma, too.
Well, at the risk of being accused of playing Pink Floyd records backwards, I saw that in the early morning tweets, too. And by way of explanation, let's talk a little bit about the way we talk about the stock market. Emphasis on the word market. It's not really a market. You can't go there and buy an onion or a rutabaga or a parsnip or a tomato or even a kumquat. It's an electronic gambling den, no less than the electronic gambling dens that that dot the strip malls of almost level West by Cold Trump Genius stand. The odds might be a little bit better in the gambling hells of West Virginia than they are on the New York Stock Exchange, but that's neither here nor there. But when we say that a market is not healthy, that it's nervous, that it's withdrawn into itself, it's not generating tremendous profits. We say that it is a bear market, you know, B-E-A-R, not B-A-R-E. And conversely, when it is running like a well-oiled machine and generating massive profits for our betters in the 1%, well, that is said to be a bull market. You know this, of course. The difference is being, for instance, that a bear is presumed to be sort of plodding and lumbering, and apparently no New York stock trader or financial reporter has ever had the dubious pleasure of being chased by a bear, because they get pretty quick, pretty fast. It's kind of like the two New York stock traders who were out in the woods and were beset by a bear that began chasing them, and the one stopped and took off his shoes, and the other one said, "That ain't gonna help you outrun that bear." And the one stock trader, being a true son of capitalism, looked at his brother stock trader and said, "Why, Throckmorton, I don't have to outrun that bear. I only have to outrun you." And took off a running. So, bears hibernate, bears sleep deeply, they're slow to, right, so that's, and then a bull, of course, a bull just charges into the ring willy-nilly, harem scarem, tears everything all to hell, and has one speed, full go. And hence the difference between a bull and a bear market. I only mention all of this because of the tweet that Geezer Disgustus sent out. Longest bull run in American history. Well, if you were a comedy writing wag, you might be inclined to say, "Yeah, no shit. We've been on a bull run. We've been on a run of bull since January the 20th, 2017, and it's been nothing but bull." But see, the folks up there on the New York Stock Exchange don't, and the Amex, there's no Amex, whatever, and the various and sundry indices and NASDAQ and whatnot, and the hog futures market and the futures market where ordinary people get screwed to the walls on gambling over hydrocarbon prices. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is they don't really much care about us. And they don't. They certainly don't care if the President of the United States is a pathological liar or a philanderer or an adulterer. The only thing that they don't care if he's an American or a Russian. What they care about is whether or not they're making money. Because, as that paragon of Republican presidents, Calvin Coolidge, once said, the business of America is business. And so it doesn't matter if Donald, it doesn't matter to the stock market if Donald Trump goes out in the middle of broad daylight on Fifth Avenue, drops trow, takes a shit on an original copy of the Constitution, and then takes another original copy of the Constitution and wipes his ass with it. It does not matter to Wall Street as long as they're making their money. That's how obscene they are. And so we are said to be in the middle of a bull market. But that is, you know, again, that's how you talk about it. It's a bear market or a bull market. I've been doing things related to the news for a long time. And I have never, I asked myself when I saw the tweet, because it just kind of, well, you know how our cowbell isn't exactly precisely tuned? It can be kind of flat and jarring, clank. Not a jingle so much as a clank. And that's because it's an old and honorable antique cowbell kindly provided by a longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. It was a family heirloom. But that when I read that phrase, bull run, a bull, the longest bull run in American history, I didn't hear a jingle, I heard a clank. It was kind of a clam. It was flat or sharp, but it was not tonally correct. It was like listening to some of that freeform jazz that I can't quite understand. Because you're expecting it to go and just... And I asked myself, you know, having read a good bit of financial reporting over the years, when maybe I just happened to miss it, and I'm sure somebody will send me, you know, 17 links to different stories using the phrase bull run instead of bull market, but I'd never seen it. But I kind of let it go until I saw a tweet from about 6 hours after that, in which Tovarich Tangerine declared that he was sicking Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point, on the government of South Africa, which incidentally is a sovereign nation. Over rumors of the rampant wholesale slaughter of poor, innocent, white farmers huddled away against the marauding horde of Negro land reformers. Now, I'm not kidding. He did that. Here, let me get the actual... actual tweet for you.
I have asked Secretary of State at Sec Pompeo to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers.
Apparently, according to the tweet, he got that notion from Tucker Carlson over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Yeah. In real time as I speak this, he sent that out about 20 hours ago. Well, there's no large-scale killing of white South African farmers, one. Two, it's none of his goddamn business. He certainly isn't concerned, for instance, about land being expropriated from, say, Palestinian families that have lived on it for a couple of thousand years in occupied Palestine. But South Africa, when I saw that's when my mind turned back to Bull Run. And I realized that what we'd had there in the space of about 6 hours was a pair of dog whistles to the white wing in the United States. Especially, and when I saw the mention of South Africa, my mind immediately turned 3 years back to 2015, and I remembered the patches that Dylan Roof was wearing on his apparel. Dylan Roof, who went into Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina, and slaughtered 9 worshipers for the crime that he perceived of being too dark of skin. Of course, we all remember that shortly thereafter, upon apprehending him, the law enforcement authorities of South Carolina took him to Burger King. But it was a reminder back then that references to what had once been called Rhodesia and to South African apartheid are almost as powerful a set of symbols as the Hakenkreuz is for that neo-Nazi scum. The swastika. And freighted, if you happen to be someone who lived under those hate-filled regimes, freighted with as much terrifying force. And having realized that he had just dog-whistled to his white supremacist base, that's when my mind sort of flipped back to that jangling phrase in the previous tweet. You know, Bull Run. Bull Run? Bull Run. Son of a gun. There were two battles of Bull Run in the Civil War. In the first one, the gentlemen and ladies of Washington, D.C. society came out in their carriages to watch the Union Army whip the ragtag upstart Confederates and end the war right then and there. And that was all well and good, except for the fact that they didn't. And in fact, the gentlemen and ladies of Washington, D.C., who had packed picnic baskets to go out and watch the battle in their carriages, found themselves caught up in the melee of the rout as the Union soldiers, having had the hell whipped out of them, ran like scalded dogs from the battlefield. Now, that might make me sound like a Southern sympathizer. I am not. It is simply a fact. They got whipped. Got whipped again at Second Bull Run, too. On almost the very same battlefield. A couple of years back in the high heat of July, Agnes and I walked about 13 miles of the trails of the Manassas National Battlefield, and I will never forget that. But Bull Run is one of the, you know, it's not like putting Gettysburg into a tweet where it would remind the white supremacist, racist base of Donald Trump voters of the ass-kicking they took. Bull Run is something of which the sons of the South are still proud. You see. And so, without trying to move over into a liberal progressive version of Alex Jones, because after all, I don't have any paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage to hustle to people who have nothing better to do with their money than buy paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage, you know, to the tune of about $30 million a year. I can't do that. But I can point out that there are linguistic realities at play out there, and there are messages being sent, and there are dog whistles being blown. And even for people, oh, Bob, that's just crazy. That's fine. Tell me it's crazy. But then again, if you're not tuned in to recognize that kind of crap, how can you know how crazy it really is? Because as we heard, and I posted on Facebook for anyone who wanted to watch the whole thing, because it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. Anyone who heard last night's program and that crazy-ass preacher, see how easy it is to say? Anyone who heard that knows that we are dealing, we're dealing with a plurality in this country that is tuned to a fever pitch and ready to snap and armed to the teeth. I am, after all, the one who coined, no one else did, this one's mine, several years ago, the concept of the Cold Civil War. And the risk with any Cold War is that it can turn hot at a moment's notice. And the hottest part about it being the lead emerging from the muzzles of firearms. So just a gentle suggestion that we pay attention to the language that these monstrosities use. And above all, take them at their word. That's all. That's all. Thank you very kindly to Brian. Brian just jumped in. We are now only $15 away from meeting Larry from Liberalville's challenge. And that means if we do that, that means that the fundraising goal has been knocked down by $100, and that would mean only $300 to go to finish the fundraising for the evening, which is powerful, powerful indeed. Thank you very kindly, Brian. Thank you so much. I hope that you'll have a little company here in short order. And thank you, John. That takes us down to $5 to go to meet Larry from Liberalville's challenge, which will then leave us only, like I said, $300 to go. Well, Lee in New York said under... not selling like Alex Jones is the subject line. Howdy, Bob. I have not forgotten your business plan to sell meat through the mail. Well, you know, the only difference being, mine will be real tasty. It won't be like Trump vodka, which was just a knockoff of Putin brand vodka, or Trump University. very complex plan to bring together. But I'm thinking more and more that it would be worth doing as part of a larger effort to redo the studio and get ready for the next 15 years of broadcasting. Something like that. So, but yeah, I'm glad you're keeping that tucked away there in memory. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. I've been periodically having to mute the microphone because I've been getting these little graphics from Nydia here in WV. You know, maybe we need to do that. This is a photograph of a speed limit sign, speed limit 45, and somebody's put a bumper sticker over the speed limit that simply says impeach. I had to mute and chuckle a little bit at that. Impeach 45. Or the graphic of Rudy Giuliani huddled there almost tete-a-tete with the chlamydia Claudius. Don't worry, prison isn't prison. But today was another very bad day for Marcus Aurelius. And the fact of the matter is, if you look objectively at it, based on what Michael Cohen has said, based upon the Manafort verdict, based on the fact that his earliest supporters are dropping like flies, based on the fact that he and his attorney general are at open war with each other, and a number of other factors, his days aren't going to be getting any better. Not that they read them or anything, but I sent a tweet the other day when he was complaining about it was after the revelations of this past Tuesday. I said, "Welcome to the first day of the rest of your life, Donnie." Because he's, 72 years old, and this is what the rest of his life is going to be. One disaster after another. There aren't going to be any moments of triumph. You could tell from how flat he was in Charleston this week that it's preying upon those thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for brains. He tried to bring the old white supremacist, racist, hate-filled magic, but he just couldn't. And he's been flat in a number of appearances now. So it's worth considering that, no, it's not going to get better for him. Every day is going to be a day like today. I got a giggle early on because I got a note from Scott in San Diego. Headline, Trump loses pecker. Yeah, that does deserve one. Because David Pecker, the man who runs the media conglomerate that includes the National Enquirer, who has been a years-long friend of Donald Trump, who has jetted back and forth with him on his various aircraft, slept under his roof. Well, with a little cajoling from the United States Department of Justice, particularly the Southern District of New York, Pecker has, as the bard said, screwed his courage to the sticking place. And, well, another headline, Trump gets screwed by Pecker. Because for months now, David Pecker and another of his associates there at AMI American Media Inc., the overarching corporate conglomerate that owns the National Enquirer, has been rolling like a little red wagon on his dear, dear friend, Donald Trump. Granted, it may very well be because their ass was in the sling. Pecker in sling. The headlines just write themselves, don't they? But role, nonetheless, he has. Lawyers for AMI having determined early on that it would be to AMI's benefit to cooperate with the investigation, particularly, and the investigation particularly has to do with Donald Trump's direction of what were thought to be secret campaign payoffs to the women, the sex workers with whom he had had a relationship. While within the holy bonds of matrimony, which, of course, Donald Trump has manifested over the course of his miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg life as having not much in the way of force and effect. Yeah, the pecker rolled. Pecker stuck it in him and broke it off. And the importance of this, of course, is that this means that there is not one, but at least two sources of confirmation of the dirty dealings that took place in an effort to influence the presidential election of 2016. That means it will not be proven on any potential charge, will not be proven solely on the word of Michael Cohen, but it will have a pecker back. That is significant. And then there's, of course, as we discussed earlier, there's Don McGahn, White House counsel, who worked day and night and studied hard and wrote his briefs and scrambled and scrounged and clawed and dug and scrapped his way through a lower-tier law school and then scrabbled and scrounged and scrapped his way through the lower echelons of the Republican Party and climbed the Republican Party infrastructure power ladder until he reached the point where he became White House counsel under Donald Trump, and maybe even thought that he was going to be able to earn an honest living thereby. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt, Don McGahn. But when you've expended that much effort into trying to build a life for yourself, you don't just throw it all away and take one in the neck for a man of no loyalty whatsoever like Donald J. Trump. Mm-mm, no. You just don't. And so he has rolled like a little red wagon on Donald J. Trump. That's quite a list we're compiling there of people who have... And that's a lot. Never mind the witch hunt. This is a wagon race to compete with what happened on the Arkansas-Oklahoma border 150 or so years ago. I just pulled that number out of my head. I don't know exactly when the Sooner land rush took place. It's not at the fingertips of my neurons. Because there's wagons rolling everywhere. Omarosa, the stuff in the tell-all book earlier. What's his name? And one doesn't necessarily know how much, and one suspects that this it's not a big number. How much self-reflection there is in the mind of Donald Trump? But even if it's minuscule, you got to think that at least one of those spirochetes is down there going, "Oh, we're screwed. We are not going to enjoy prison at all. And we don't like worrying every day of our lives." And if he goes, we go. And so you can't help wondering if there might be just even a tiny little bit of self-awareness that says, "You know, I make a deal with Mike Pencilneck Geek. He does for me what Ford did for Nixon. And maybe here in a few years I'll be viewed as an elder statesman by the Republicans and they'll be talking about the good old days of me." '89, the Oklahoma land rush. So, 130 or so. Not bad. Close. But he's not going to have anything in the way of better days. And by the way, via the Associated Press, and thank you, Sparky. Some breaking news, because the news is going to continue to break, and it's not going to be good for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Associated Press headline: National Enquirer's safe held damaging Trump stories. The National Enquirer kept a safe containing documents on hush money payments and other damaging stories it killed as part of its cozy relationship with Donald Trump leading up to the 2016 presidential election, people familiar with the arrangement told the Associated Press. The detail came as several media outlets reported on Thursday that federal prosecutors had granted immunity to National Enquirer Chief David Pecker, potentially laying bare his efforts to protect his longtime friend Trump. Apparently they're not longtime friends anymore. They haven't spoken in months. A number of people who work for American media had, by the way, signed non-disclosure agreements. And they said the safe that David Pecker had was the source of his power. The records were stored alongside similar documents pertaining to other celebrities' catch-and-kill deals in which exclusive rights to people's stories were bought with no intention of publishing to keep them out of the news. You know what? That's not a journalism enterprise. That's a racket. And that engenders a broader discussion of what constitutes journalism. You know, there are any number of people who went out, for instance, to cover the Dakota Access Pipeline crime against humanity, and who were arrested and prosecuted even though they were engaged in what can only be considered journalism. They were reporting the facts on the ground. They were not acting as I mean, they might have had a preference for how that worked out, but they were not acting as advocates. They were not participating in the protests. But they were prosecuted as though they were. And the argument was that they weren't really journalists. Well, it appears that David Pecker was as vile and vulgar as the National Enquirer is and can be. Just ask the people who have been forced to sue them over the scurrilous things that they have published. It was not in any way a journalism operation. It was an active communications arm of Trump for President 2016. And that's one of the things that probably played into the decision by their lawyers not to hop up and down about the First Amendment, because the lawyers themselves recognized that they were not engaged in protected First Amendment activity, but that in fact they were nothing more than partisan political campaign hacks, who, incidentally, along the way, were involved with largely criminal enterprises. Say what you will of Richard Nixon. The stuff of Watergate is beginning to pale by comparison to this business. Really pale. And just as I have argued in the past, and we have largely agreed, that the Republican Party of 2016 and the Trump that they gave us is a natural outgrowth of the Republican Party for the last 60 years. Well, this is too. If you could have a Watergate, that means you can have a Michael Cohen, Trump, Pecker triumvirate. Pecker. Sorry. In which rather vast conspiracies are entered into to try to steal an election. And yeah, I frame it that way. We're talking about a conspiracy to steal an election. Because the only reason for burying the stories of the sexual shenanigans of Donald Trump was because they recognized, or they at least feared, that they could not bring home the evangelical bacon with information about him being the 20th and 21st century equivalent of some orange-furred satyr chasing after nymphs with bunny tails in the forest. And so I would argue that Trump 2018 is a reasonable and foreseeable consequence of CREEP 72, the Committee to Re-Elect the President, 1972. And I know that a lot of us are frustrated. Because, by God, we want impeachment proceedings to be impaneled right this minute. Or at the very least, if we can make the blue wave happen, we want the impeachment proceedings to begin right that minute. And we're gonna have to cool our jets just a little bit at least. Because it's not gonna happen overnight. But I'm beginning to think that, again, if we can take the House, if we can get people, oh, dear God, like Joe Manchin reelected and Heidi Heitkamp reelected and Joe Donnelly reelected and Claire McCaskill reelected, then we've got a fighting chance of actually defending the Constitution against an enemy domestic. But if we can defend the Constitution, a piece of advice. This time we absolutely must do what the Watergate generation did not do. And there's a certain amount of irony that I'm talking about, that I made mention of Bull Run first and second. And now I'm talking about this because the same mistakes were made, especially after second Bull Run, that were made after, oddly enough, Watergate. They managed to save the Constitution and after Watergate and ran Richard Nixon out of office. But then the generation that did that did what the Confederate soldiers after Second Manassas did. They stopped and they celebrated. In the case of Second Manassas, Second Bull Run, a lot of war material, clothing, shoes, gunpowder, whiskey, food, was left abandoned by the Union troops, and so starved and deprived were the Confederate soldiers that they stopped and reveled in all the stuff that they'd just won, instead of taking an opportunity to run them to run their opponent to ground and destroy that army once and for all. Well, the same thing happened after Watergate. So elated were people that they had gotten rid of Richard Pinhead Nixon that they stopped and roundly and soundly congratulated themselves and did such a thorough job of it that Ronald Reagan was almost able to mount an insurgency in 1976 and take the Republican nomination away from Gerald Ford, their incumbent. Ford then narrowly lost to Carter. And then by 1980... we had a nominee in Ronald Reagan who would prove to be a bigger criminal than Richard Nixon had ever even dreamed of being. And now, in 2018, we have in Donald Trump a man who has proven to be a bigger criminal than Ronald Reagan could have been on his best or worst, depending on how you describe it, day. I realize that I'm counting some significantly unhatched chickens. Wait a minute, I'm trying to say that Trump style after the... chickens! Chickens! China! Chickens! But if we are successful, the Republican Party must finally, once and for all, be broken up into a million tiny pieces, ground into dust, and the dust scattered to the four corners of the planet. Because it has proven time and time and time again a vampire-like quality to reconstitute itself and do more harm in its reconstituted form than it did the time before. And it looks like we have the evidence to do the job. My goodness gracious. Pecker, enrolling on Trump, said that, yeah, he confirmed Cohen making the payments to Stormy Daniels and Susan McDougal. Payments of $130,000 and $150,000. And so every time that Donald Trump has looked into the camera and said he knew nothing about it, David Pecker has known he was lying. Bill in Allentown, subject line, Trump as Sisyphus. You know how Sisyphus kept trying to roll a boulder up a hill? Well, Trump is trying to run the hill as fast as he can, trying to outrun the boulder. The problem for Trump is that he's about to be flattened by the boulder. Just think of the lumbering Trump being run over by the rock. Well, we've got Bill, I appreciate the image, but we got a lot of work to do to give that rock the kinetic force that it'll need. Scott in San Diego says, I know I'm like a broken record with this, Bob, but this TV viewing tip bears repeating for some history and insights about the National Enquirer. If you have an Amazon Prime Video account, check out the fascinating and informative 2014 Rick Burns documentary, Inquiring Minds, The Untold Story of the National Enquirer. It's free for subscribers at Amazon Prime and just a few bucks for everybody else. Note from Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana. All this talk about Diet Coke is scaring me, Bob. Because of weight and high sugar, I gave up regular soda 35 years ago for diet soda. If it's going to turn me into a Trump, I may need to turn to my Diet Pepsi for something a little healthier and stronger, may need to turn in my Diet Pepsi for something a little healthier and stronger, like maybe Wild Turkey. Well, if you have problems dealing with blood sugar, I would suggest going to a clear liquor, like maybe vodka or pure grain alcohol. And rainwater, Mandrake. Rainwater. I think what ruined Trump last night was the fact that it's the caffeine. You know, you slug down a couple of Diet Cokes before bed, and all of a sudden you're not so sleepy anymore. Funny how that stuff works. Past the hour, and I'm happy to announce that Larry from Liberalville's challenge has been met. And that means, and then 20 bucks in, 20 bucks in addition, taken off of the fundraising deficit for the evening. So we are now happily at 280 bucks to go to finish the evening. Thank you, Louie. Thank you, Louie or Lewis. Tell me how to say it. Very kindly. Thank you very much indeed. And like I said, I realize that any talk of all that talk is entirely premature. And that there's even a bit of the same flaw that the Nixon generation and the Confederates committed in even talking about it. But there is hard grinding work ahead. Just got a breaking news alert from the New York Times. Headline, President Trump's lawyers warned him not to consider pardons for former aides under investigation until the special counsel inquiry was over. That according to Rudy Giuliani. We'll see whether that sticks or not. One has a feeling that the National Enquirer safe is going to be a little bit more interesting in its opening than, say, Al Capone's was when Geraldo Rivera found that one. This one actually has stuff in it. Oh, and by the way, part of the reason for Packer rolling as he did, well, at this point in time, these are all conspiracies. Consider that, okay, so there are two, guilty pleas by Cohen, and they are as to these substantial crimes, the substantive crimes that he committed in doing those payoffs. But guess what? That means there's two counts for every one count Cohen pled guilty to for Trump. Because there's the substantive crime, and then there's the conspiracy to commit. And again, we're getting to all of this before we're finding out anything definitive by way of a report from Robert Mueller. Meanwhile, of course, if you... One of the more interesting actualities I've heard had kind of a Zen quality to it was some reporter sticking a microphone in chinless Mitch McConnell's face saying, you still support Mueller, don't you? Silence. Every question he asked him, silence. He just kept walking. If, as I have said, John Roberts is the most evil and brilliant Republican politician in Washington, D.C., Chinless Mitch is number two. Chinless Mitch is number two in a number of ways. Reminds me of that clip from Austin Powers. Who does number two work for? Well, in this case, number two works for Donald Trump. Note coming from James in Illinois. Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. Wow, two Mike Myers references in a row. Just as Joe Lieberman wound up running under the Party of Joe banner, Drumpf was all for himself, doing anything and everything to beat down anyone who stood in his way regarding impeachment. It must be done following the moves of a chess master. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. So we're almost to the halfway point of the program this evening. If we can reach the fundraising goal for the evening and finish it off being... I'm sorry if I misspoke, $280 away from finishing it off. I'll get the bill paid, the one critical bill paid this evening, and I'll be happy to report at the beginning of the of Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow that there will, in fact, be, continued programming, if we can reach that fundraising goal. There's a lot more than 28 people listening to the program. And if 28 people kick in $10, the problem is solved. And that leaves only tomorrow to finish. But we will be guaranteed on the air for the foreseeable future. Okay? That's where it is. But at almost the halfway point of the program, filibobstered half the program away. But the heart and soul and essence of the program is, of course, conversation. That's why we call it Conversation Radio. And you're welcome to share your thoughts. I, in fact, encourage it. I welcome it. I value it. And the way you reach the program, of course, is area code 304-574-8178 or toll-free from Canada, Mexico, or the new United States of Merca, 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676, toll free. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never contacted or connected that way, then send me a contact request. I'll okay it right away, and then we'll be engaged in what makes this program in many ways so special. Oh, that's a good question coming from Hung Like Jesus. Bob, do you think the Republicans could be letting Trump hang himself so his base won't blame them, thus saving themselves? Yeah, but there's a calculation going on inside the Republican Party that has a bit of the Scylla and Charybdis to it. And what I mean by that is, yeah, they might try to stay silent in the hopes that he will do himself in, because I think there's a good chance of it. But they do that at the risk of the blessed and holy and sacred independent swing voters, who are said to be departing his camp in droves. It all depends on who one depends upon in one's given congressional district. The Trump base, or if it's a narrow race, independent swing voters. For instance, in that district that we briefly discussed in Texas, the 24th congressional district, at an R+9 rating, as Lee discovered, if you're that guy, if you're the congressman who talked about the fetuses masturbating in the womb, then you probably play toward Trump and you remain a loyalist. If you're any politician in Alabama, except the couple of Democrats there are, you stay with Trump. Witness the performance by pill pushing Patrick Morrissey here in West Virginia Tuesday night. If he'd gotten his nose any closer to Trump's ass, you would have found a brown stain on a Kleenex if he'd blown his nose. So that's the reality of the situation. On the other hand, I've got something from the vault. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Because this is sort of special. Let's see, it might take just a second here. There it is. This goes into the Wayback Machine to January the 23rd, 1999. I offer you the words of Lindsey Graham, way back in 1999, was only beginning to develop his little old bald patch in the little old back of his little old pumpkin head, still had color in his hair, thin, trim, fit, and absolutely on fire with righteous indignation. Yeah. Bear witness, if you please.
So the point I'm trying to make is you don't even have to be convicted of a crime to lose your job in this constitutional republic. If this body determines that your conduct as a public official is clearly out of bounds in your role. Because impeachment is not about punishment. Impeachment is about cleansing the office. Impeachment is about restoring honor and integrity to the office.
Why, yes. Yes, Lindsay, it is.
Of course, 2018, Lindsay, would very much like for us to forget that 1999, Lindsay, ever said any of those things, because, of course, where the obvious crimes in which, because, of course, they are surrounded by guilty pleas. Understand, in January of 1999, when Lindsay was talking about that, he was talking about a man who did or might have, maybe sort of, kind of, depending on how you viewed the situation, told a fib about whether or not he got a blowjob. No one had pled guilty saying, I got him the blowjob and he asked me to get him the blowjob. In other words, the standard was both lower and higher at the same time. Lindsay was deeply offended by the moral turpitude of our president. He had, I'm sure, right there in his little jacket pocket there, he had a pocket square that was positively soaked in smelling salts, and he had to huff on them in order just to retain consciousness, because every time he thought about Bill Clinton getting that blowjob, well, bang, there he was, right back onto the fainting couch there in the ancestral estate known down that way as Smoldering Chode. When they stuck the microphone in his face in the last day or so, the best Lindsay could muster for the admitted multiple felonies in which the President of the United States is undeniably implicated was to say, well, we'll just have to let the judicial process run its course. Further proof that there's no great big bearded juvenile delinquent up in the sky hurling lightning bolts. Because the minute he said that, if there had been, well, and there wouldn't have been nothing but a little greasy spot smelling a mint julep where previously had stood precious Lindsey Graham. Yes. You get my meaning. Time to send out some more thanks. Thanks to Libby. Just took us down to 260 to go. Thank you, Libby, so very much. Jack in Shreveport just took us down to 210. Thank you, Jack. So this is getting possible. $210 to go. Thank you. Thank you, Libby, and thank you to Jack. Steve pointing out via email, subject line, Lindsay. Every talking head show this Sunday ought to be rubbing Lindsay's nose in that 1999 statement. Do you think they have the balls to do it? They lack both the balls and or the ovaries to do it. And after all, that wouldn't be sporting now, would it? That's unfair. Because back then, Lindsay was talking about a political opponent, not somebody that he supported with all of his heart after he said something nasty about him, and the candidate said something nasty back, and Lindsay wet his late lace knickers and ran and passed out on the fainting couch some more.
Yes.
Jeff from Hillhole, Indiana says, hopefully the Democrats have learned something that we failed to exercise when we had that brief 2 years where we had majorities in the Congress and 59 in the Senate. Don't try to reach across the aisle and compromise with these bastards. We've seen how that worked out. Regain both houses in 2018, the White House in 2020, and then put our foot on the throats of these assholes and crush them like we should have then. I can't be the only one who knew then as I do now. Working with these people, the word people is in quotes,
does not work. James with an observation. Lindsay's mama done told him to stay away from them dirty girls, and he's still doing it.
Mercy sakes. Yes. Well, let's run over to the phones and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Dave from Indiana Stan again.
Well, hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Hey, I called my senators, you know, both Republicans, Donnelly and Young, and I got a little pushback from Young's office saying, well, the Eighth Act is a regional law, and I thought, you bastards. But what's bothering
Dave, to be fair, it there's an element of truth in that. I mean, it pertains to mountaintop removal that's done in northeast Tennessee, southwest Virginia, eastern Kentucky, and all of West Virginia. And to that extent, it's regional, but that doesn't mean it is of no import to someone in Tallahassee.
Well, and I figure with as many people around here that have relatives in those areas, and you get south of I-40, and there's a lot of them, you would think that at some point their relatives would look over and go, well, what about my mama, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But it just... But, no, I called because I've been hearing a bunch about Kavanaugh, and the problem I've got with him is evidently he slept through the part of law school where they read the Constitution, because in the Constitution, it makes it quite clear that the investigative power rests with the House. Now, whether you indict a sitting president for a crime he commits while in office, that's one question. But a lot of these things happened with Trump while he was still a private citizen or running for the office.
Yeah, and it's the running for the office. It's the running for the office part that implicates that triggers federal law. Because, again, the admission by Cohen was that the payoffs were made to influence the election.
Yeah, and I just see that they're going to give this asshole a pass. And like you said, we need to take back the House. We need to take back the Senate. We need to take back the White House and scatter these bastards to the wind. I mean... Really, my own father and I haven't talked since election night because he's a full-on Trump-trained maggot.
And it becomes almost impossible to leave that to the side and not discuss it. I understand. And it's not because you're the one who's kind of... I mean, I'm guessing here, and I'm not present for the conversations, but I'm guessing you're not the one bringing up Trump. It's been my experience maggots... The maggots are the ones that want to run their mouths and do not wish to live in peace.
He ran his mouth all through the election on his Facebook page, and I called him up to congratulate him and the rest of the American Nazi Party, I mean Republicans, and asked him what color suit he wanted to wear to the Christmas cross burning in New York. So... It took umbrage at that.
That's a little harsh, Dave. I mean, but
I know it's a little harsh, but it fits.
Well, we're talking about Nazis. If you're not going to be harsh about Nazis, who are you going to be harsh about?
Yeah. So, I mean, he's voted for every crooked Republican since Nixon. And when I bring that up and I mention that Trump was a crook, obviously I was in the wrong. Because he's 19 years and 51 weeks older than I am. And obviously, he knows better. But when I told him, I said, you know, you voted for every crooked Republican. AJ made the line, oh, I'm not a racist. I said, yeah, but you voted for 20 of them.
Well, Dave, will you bear with me for a second and let me engage in a little sociology here, because my experience with my close at hand experience with the state of Talibandiana is two drives through it and two railroad trips through it with no real stopping. Okay. No, I take it back. We did stop the night in is it Wabash, Indiana? That's the home of Wabash College.
Yeah,
we stopped the night there, but didn't really have a chance to talk to any genuine, no kidding, right there on the ground Talibandianians. What is the Indiana fascination with Republicans?
Well, it goes back to a man named D.C. Stevens, who was the grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan in like 14 states. There was a woman that he killed named Madge Oberholzer back in the late 20s. The Klan was staunchly Republican back then in Indianistan, and I did some research on this when I was in college. While Indiana fought for the Union during the war, they kind of went the other way in the decades that followed. And when Stevens, who lived here in Indianapolis, killed this young woman, it caused such a stir that when he was convicted, it was brought out in the trial that he had been a drinker when the Klan claimed to be teetotalers, the protectors of white women, and this was a white woman he killed. And they just had this fascination with Republicans because the Republicans have tended over the years to wrap themselves around the party of Lincoln. Well, Lincoln lived in Indiana for quite a while in his youth. And so we kind of adopted him along with Kentucky and Illinois. And that's really where the fascination is. With Stevenson, he is a very powerful man. He was a very wealthy man. And eventually, he got a conditional pardon from the governor of Indiana. He was convicted of second-degree murder. He got out 5 years later, and he was told never to come back to Indiana. That was one of the things he told the governor, was that he had a job outside of Indiana. The governor gave him the pardon, and until the day he died, the state of Indiana had tried to revoke his pardon because he did not meet the conditions. But you mentioned God, guns, and Bible around here. They lose their minds. You talk about the strychnine snake handlers. The only thing we don't have here in abundance is the snake handlers. I mean, that's just what you're dealing with, especially down in the southern half of India, if that helps.
Well, it does. It does. And you obviously know your Indiana history. Let me ask you another question. Are you familiar with the name Thomas Riley Marshall?
No, I'm not.
Thomas Riley Marshall is another Hoosier. He's the other Hoosier who was Vice President of the United States. He was Woodrow Wilson's Vice President of the United States. He was an astute political operator and had a sharp wit and a sharper tongue.
Sounds like my kind of fellow.
He was the man who gave us the phrase, what this country needs is a good 5-cent cigar.
Okay.
And that, yeah, and he gave us that, though, as a witty repartee to some fulminating politician who, what this country needs. And Thomas Riley Marshall said, yeah, what this country needs is a good 5-cent cigar. You know, totally dismissing the guy. But here's what I find fascinating about Thomas Riley Marshall. He is the man that after Woodrow Wilson had his stroke.
Should have been president of the United States.
Yes. But here's where it gets a little hinky. And this is where history deals rather harshly with Thomas Riley Marshall. There are historians out there who put the blame for the existence of World War II squarely on the shoulders of Thomas Riley Marshall.
That's BS, Bob.
Well, hold on, though. Hold on. Because the way the thinking goes, and the way it went factually, is when when Woodrow Wilson became incapacitated, members of Congress went to Thomas Riley Marshall, and remember the law was undefined. Okay, the presidential succession was not worked out, and we certainly didn't have anything. We didn't have anything that talked about what a vice president did when a president became incapacitated. That would wait. Yeah. Hell, John Kennedy had to be killed before we finally actually passed that constitutional amendment. And so Riley, being a halfway decent lawyer and a far better politician, told the members of Congress who came to him in a delegation begging him to take on the mantle of the presidency that he would do so if they would pass a law declaring that he had that right constitutionally. And you can understand why he would make a decision like that.
Yeah, because it hadn't been settled. I mean, Wilson wasn't dead yet.
Right. And Wilson's wife would not even allow Marshall anywhere near him. Wouldn't allow him to see him. Because the fact of the matter was, Wilson was utterly, completely, and totally incapacitated. He was in what you and I and medical science would probably have described as a vegetative state. But here's where the reason that they wanted him to take the reins of government was because these lawmakers also apparently desperately wanted to see the United States ratify the League of Nations Treaty, which, because of Woodrow Wilson's ham-fistedness and his insult to Senator Henry Cabot Lodge of Maine, had not been ratified. And the thinking was that Thomas Riley Marshall, being a better politician, could have mollified the Republicans.
Lodge. Yeah.
And gotten it ratified, and that had the League of Nations been had a full participant makeup, that World War II could have been avoided, and that the rise of Hitler and the remilitarization and the rearming of Germany could have been stopped before it ever got rolling. But now we have now we have our second Hoosier vice president, and more so than has been done since this presidential regime began, there are talks about what kind of president would Mike Pence make.
I've lived under a Pence regime, and there's a reason you should be terrified. the man's a religious bigot, and he's all willing to start a war to bring Jesus back. You know, so I wouldn't trust that bastard as far as I could throw in my house.
Oh, that's true. And so, you know, we face a situation where the country and the world may twice be screwed by a vice president from Indiana.
Well, you know, let's not forget the brain trust in Dan Quayle.
Ooh, that's three. That's three.
And
I'm
I think there's Wendell Willkie, I think, was vice president under, I want to say under Hoover. I'd have to look that up.
Okay.
But yeah, we've had a few also lands in Indiana, but only one president from Indiana.
And that was
Benjamin Harrison.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
And he had been he was a general during the Civil War. And he died in 1901. I used to live a block from his house. And the man was fascinating. It was when the Republicans actually stood for something decent. And I think one of the problems is you can't have a multi-party republic without having healthy political parties. And we've got a really sick party in the Republicans. Something's got to be done. And, you know, I was an education major in college with a concentration in social studies. So I know I've studied this stuff. And that's an interesting argument about the beginning of World War II. I'll have to look into that a little bit.
Well, I found it fascinating, and I was aware of Thomas Riley Marshall primarily because we were back when we were little pimply-faced freshman pledges to my fraternity. We were taught about him being one of the it was kind of ironic. He was a member of my fraternity, and then the next vice president, who then went on to become president, was a member of my fraternity.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, now I have to hide my head in shame because the illegitimate justice who sits on the Supreme Court is also a member of my fraternity. Neil Gorsuch.
You guys can't blackball in post-graduation?
Well, you know, it's almost enough to make you want to call up a meeting and get out the robes.
I think that would be more damaging to him than anything else.
Well, but the problem with the Greek system in the so-called Greek system in American colleges and universities is that they tend to turn out right-wing conservative Republicans as opposed to wild-eyed left-wing radicals like yours truly.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you just know how wild-eyed I am.
I had a friend of mine in college. He was at IU Law School, and he pledged a fraternity that started as part of the initiation, had put a rather racist and sexist scavenger hunt together, and it scandalized the campus. And he looked over at them during his pledge period and said, "No, I'm not going to be part of this fraternity." And he walked. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. And the man went on to Georgetown Law School. So.
Well, good for him.
Sometimes that process gets... gets guys like him motivated. And I asked him what he was going to do with his law degree. He said he was going to go in and work for Democratic candidates on their campaigns instead of becoming specialists in campaigning.
Wow. By the way, we have an update courtesy of Scott on Wendell Willkie. Ran against FDR in 1940. He'd been a Democrat until 1939 until switching to the GOP. Born in Elwood, Indiana in 1892. Died in 1944.
Yeah.
But all kidding aside, you know, Ohio has a pretty long-standing Republican history. And then, you know, the same.
A lot of people from you get a confluence of people from Ohio and Indiana. Back in the colonial days, the area that's now Indiana was part of Virginia.
Oh yeah, Virginia's borders extended theoretically to the Pacific Ocean, or at least the Mississippi River. And
Mississippi was where it ended.
And then
all that came out of Richmond, and they gave them deniability. Oh, we don't have settlers in Indiana. No.
Well, and in the early days here in Appalachia, when people lit out for the West, what that meant was Indiana and Ohio.
That was the West. Yeah. My great grandmother remembered coming over the Cumberland Gap in a covered wagon.
Wow.
But she was, you know, I think she was born in the 1880s or something like that, yeah.
But still came, that was still a major thoroughfare.
Yeah, and she remembered as a little girl, her parents were from Germany, so much so that her brother didn't learn English until he was like in eighth grade. They used to beat him because his accent was so heavy. And he later became a car dealer back in the 40s and 50s. So, yeah. It's weird how that sort of thing happens. But that's why Indiana is so Republican. And even the Democrats are Republican, right?
Well, it was, and that's a classic example of the Republican Party, of people staying with a label while the party itself has shifted political, its pole has shifted on the compass.
Yeah.
Because the Republican Party of, the brand spanking new Republican Party of 1860 is not the same thing as the Republican Party of today any more than the Democratic Party of Andrew Jackson that cheerled a genocide is the same as the Democratic Party today that has a far better now has a far better civil rights record than any Republican of the modern era.
Well, I think if Lincoln were to come back today, he'd be crying his eyes out. Because, really, his ideas while he was in the presidency was to preserve the union. I don't see any union here. I see a bunch of factional crap, and everybody's trying to grab their share. And then you get the rise of people like Roy Tolomore, who wanted do away with every amendment to the Constitution except the first 10. And my ex-wife is an African-American woman. I said, you know what that means? And she goes, they'll have to kill me first. So I take this extremely seriously.
As well, I think you should.
You know, people think I'm being hyperbolic about it, but I said, look at your history. I mean, we're, you know, when they say this country is more divided now than it was before the Civil War, they're right. But there are a hell of a lot more of us, too. And there's a lot more guns. and there's a lot more mobility, that makes for a much more dangerous situation. You used to have to move people from place to place on foot or by horseback. Now, you just get in the car and, you know, in 7 or 8 hours, I could be in West Virginia. So, you know, that, you know, they think, oh, well, that was 153 years ago, Dave. Well, people don't change in 150 years. We're still grasping, greedy little apes that...
Well, if we're going to cast it in those terms, we don't do a very good job of changing over the course of about 40 or 50,000 years.
Well, that's true too. But you get my meaning.
Oh, absolutely.
It's things like this and that just help keep me sane, being able to talk to people about it. And
well, that's why we describe this as a community.
It is a community, and I hope that you can get all the support you can, Bob.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you so very much.
Vital.
I do appreciate it.
All right, Bob. Well, I'll get off here so somebody else can get on.
All right, and I'm absolutely fascinated with your knowledge of Indiana's past. I didn't know about the murderous Klansmen, and
well,
I look forward.
It so happened that I went to school with a guy who lived in his house where the attack occurred.
Oh my God!
I mean, this guy had gotten drunk, raped and chewed off the nipple of the woman. She took poison and then wanted to go to a hospital, and he said infamously, when she said, "I'll have the law on you," he said, "I am the law in Indiana."
Wow.
And he had every reason to believe that he would get off because there were 4 known Klansmen on the jury when they went to trial.
Kind of like that one lone maggot on the Manafort jury that kept the other 10 counts from going to conviction.
Yep. And the funny thing is, the juror that spoke out on Fox News said, "I'm a Trump supporter." And this guy, I felt this guy was guilty on all counts. So maybe there's a little ray of hope there that when actually shown the evidence, some of these maggots are... Well, you know what? That wasn't what they promised me. And that's one reason the Klan went from 4 million members to 400,000 the year after. Because people were wanting to not be associated with them.
But look at that. There's a lesson in that, too. They went from 4 million to 400,000. That meant that there were 400,000 who were still okay with it. Just like you can say of every single individual who voted for Donald Trump, they heard what he said, they knew what he did, and they said, "Well, that's okay. I'll vote for him just the same."
Yeah.
That base of his that's so frequently referred to, that 33, 35, 39% of American voters, is the absolute moral worst that this ethical worst that this country has to offer. And what scares the daylights out of me is that there may be just enough of them to ruin it for the rest of us.
We just can't have nice things these days because of people like that.
That's the truth. Dave, you have yourself a wonderful evening. I really appreciate the call.
You too, Bob, and take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Bye now.
All right, bye.
That's our buddy Dave calling from Talibandiana. Update, let's see, we were at 280, right? It's 4 minutes past 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Mitchell jumped in. and takes us down to 260 with a message. I vaguely remember during the 2008 primary between Clinton and Obama, Lanny Davis on CNN spreading the smear that Obama was a Muslim. Does that ring a bell? Yeah, there's a lot about Lanny Davis that rings bells. And, well, all I can say is this. When it comes to anybody who's ever dealt with, any lawyer who's ever dealt with a trial situation understands one fundamental fact. You only have a trial because neither side can agree on what the facts are. And we can get onto the shifting sands and say what the truth is. And going all the way back to merry old England, when a wagon would be dragged through the shit-filled, rutted roads of those medieval days, and a bunch of freemen would sit on the wagon and hear competing stories and decide which person was telling the truth, it's all we've got. And so, yeah, Lanny Davis, slimy. But you're hard-pressed to find a lawyer who works in that rarefied atmosphere who cannot be similarly described, because their business is to take the cases of people accused of doing slimy things who have lots of money to spend trying to stay out of prison. Secondly, and where my, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and defend Michael Cohen as suddenly having become some paragon of virtue, but I will also say this. When your house is burning down, You really don't much care if that bucket of what you presume to be water is actually piss, and you throw it on the fire and put out the fire. Yeah, you're going to have some problems with the fact that it was piss instead of pure water, but the fire was the greater problem. And in this case, Trump is the greater problem. He is the fire that is burning down our country. And if it takes a bucket of warm piss, like Michael Cohen, to help extinguish the flames, all I can say is everybody drop trowel and get busy filling the bucket. But thank you, Mitchell, for taking us down to 260. And thanks also to Steve from North Carolina for taking us down to 240. Thank you very, very much indeed. This is badly needed help, and I will tell you when we get to the point where I can make the payment and guarantee that we will be it will be on the air, and the program will not be interrupted. So we've got 240 to go. A total of 440 to finish the week, and in fact, finish the month of August. So we'll cross our fingers. And having crossed our fingers, we'll run over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I on?
You are.
Hey, it's Matt from up in Humboldt.
I recognized your voice, Matt. How are you? I just didn't recognize the phone number.
Okay. I'm hanging in there, and I probably need to correct you on the fundraising. Didn't Jack and someone else kick in a little while ago, which took you down to 210?
No, no, not down to, that took us down to 310 from an original of 400.
Okay, because I was... Okay, because you started it.
Yeah, and that helped me, and right.
The challenge was met.
Yeah.
And I think you may be down to 170.
That would be great if we are. I am liable to make mistakes ciphering on the fly.
They might want to double check that, because I think just a while back I'm listening live, and I think you were at 280, and then you got eventually got down to 210, and then you got these Mitchell and whoever the last person was should have taken you down to 170.
Let me see here. One eighty is what has come in.
Okay.
Yeah, 180 is what has come in, and we take in the challenge, and that means that, 170, by God. You're right.
Hey. Oh, my. Well, so...
And now it is 145, thanks to
wow.
Henry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. We may get this done yet.
Yeah, it could happen.
Especially, yeah, see, that... Yeah, you were a little too pessimistic there.
Well, no, I'm incompetent to cipher on the fly is what I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that can happen. Well, oh boy, what a weird life.
So yeah, 145 to finish the evening and 345 to finish the night or finish the week and the month.
Right. And 145 will be able to pay that bill.
Yep, we will. I will pay it as soon as the program is over.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, get to it, everybody.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Matt. And thanks for the correction. I don't know. Maybe I need to.
Maybe
you know, I'm proud. I don't like to cheat and use the calculator.
Yeah.
I was always taught as a kid, you know, you got to be able to do math in your head. You know, you
right.
got to at least be able to do basic sums and subtraction mm-hmm. and a little bit of long division and know your multiplying
sure.
tables and stuff. And well,
sure. Well, at least maybe that'll inspire some people, because I think what might happen is people feel like they're if it's just a huge hole and they don't have much to contribute on any given day, you start to think, well, you know, is this really going to help?
Right.
So maybe that'll inspire some more people to bring it the rest of the way down.
It would be wonderful if it did. And
mm-hmm.
and just to finish off the week and the month.
Yeah.
Because all kidding aside, Matt, I enjoy the hell out of being able to do nothing but thank the subscribers for a week of broadcasting and not having to say a God blessed word about any of this.
Yeah, I'll bet. That's
you know, if Mr. Soros would come through with his big old money check, and I never had to say another word about it again, I'd probably be the happiest broadcaster in America.
Well, or would you really? Because I bet you, even if you got a check like that, there would be strings attached. And
you mean things I could the things I couldn't say and things I'd have to say?
Yeah, you know that's one of the things about this particular program, unlike so many others. And that's really kind of what draws me to it is that you're not limited by that. You don't have to think about what some advertiser is gonna think. You know, is this gonna sell ads or if you say something that's going to cause advertisers or benefactors to get upset and drop their support. That's, you know, a lot of that, even, you know, that's kind of a problem that a lot of the sort of the programming on this side of the.
You still there, Matt?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You dropped out. You said programming on this side of the, and then the
of
classic.
The, of the spectrum.
Oh, okay.
On this side of the spectrum has to worry about a little bit, you know, saying something that might upset somebody that's helping pay the bills. And then they, in turn, drop their support and the. And then it goes downhill from there. So imagine if you got a big Soros check or the equivalent, it would seem like a pretty nice right at the beginning, but it.
Well, you know, all kidding aside. I have very pedestrian wants. I joke about the Gulfstream 5
yeah.
and the kidney shaped swimming pool and. I haven't checked into Agnes to see if she really does want a masseur, but.
She might.
But
she might.
You know,
I don't know.
I do the best job. I do as well as I can, as an amateur, but. You know.
Yeah. Well, Agnes probably could use a masseur, come to think of it. She's got to put up with you all day.
Well, thanks a million. Hold on a minute, Matt. There we go, fainting with damn praise again.
Well. but boy, what a wild and crazy last couple of days it's been.
It's been exciting, to say the very least.
Mm-hmm. The, you know, it's starting, you know, I think what you were saying earlier about, you know, there's not, Trump doesn't have too many, isn't going to have any more better days. I think that may be coming to pass with, especially with all of these, you know, these different pieces coming into play all at the same time.
Oh, I think you're right. And the other part of that is going to be watching the degree to which the right wing comes unglued.
Yeah, well, what was it? Didn't somebody say on when you had your had the impromptu front porch thing the other night during the Clyburn rally and there in West Virginia, there was somebody on there that said that I guess was looking over at the Fox News chyron and said, look what they're talking about. Pretty white girl in Iowa gets killed by an illegal immigrant.
Exactly.
So they're, in other words, they were trying to divert attention. So you know, I guess the question is what's going to be, you know, the shiny object or the multiple shiny objects that get dropped.
Well, they are certainly dragging poor Molly Tibbetts through the mud.
Molly Tibbetts.
The white girl who got murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to ride her dead murdered back. As many Republicans will climb on her as physics will allow.
Right. And do they know for sure that the guy that did it?
You don't know at this point. The man deserves a trial, okay? Unless he chooses to plead guilty, he deserves a trial.
Mm-hmm.
But the chances of that individual receiving anything resembling a fair trial are approaching absolute zero at this point.
Right.
I don't know how you'd impanel a jury.
Yeah, you'd pretty much have to change the. I was going to say you'd have to change the venue, but I don't even know if you could do that.
Well, it's going to be a state crime charge, so that means it stays in Iowa, and you know this highlights, Matt, the pernicious nature of Republicans and the white wing white supremacist industry. They don't care what of our civic institutions they poison beyond repair.
If it
was up to them, they would drag that man out of jail and they would lynch him 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Because that's their conception of justice. And the Constitution means not a goddamn thing to them. Unless, of course, it has something to do with, Donald Trump admitting to multiple felonies. Or being implicated in multiple felonies, at which point the Constitution suddenly matters.
Mm-hmm. Or the Second Amendment.
Well, that's really all the Constitution there is. That and
yeah.
The part where the president's commander in chief.
Right.
Because as I noted last week, at some point, you never hear a Republican hollering for small government. In the context of our war machine,
right, or in a Republican administration, for that matter.
Yeah, well, they'll holler about small government, but government always increases in size in a Republican mm-hmm. administration because you've got to get more trotters into the trough.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The small government is just one of those phrases that. Sort of like neoliberal, but it's gotten to be one of those pat phrases that has lost its meaning.
Exactly.
And it looks like your Skype keeps dropping out.
I don't know what it's Microsoft.
Yeah,
but there'll be like these 2 or 3 second little intervals of no packets passing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I was just saying that the small government is a phrase kind of like neoliberal.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's one of those things that has gotten abused so much it's sort of lost its meaning.
Well, it there's a number of them. There's a number of those words, small government never had any meaning anyway. It's just it's kind of like
right.
that phrase clean coal. It's just an advertising slogan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I would suggest, and I've got a clip here, that we take these freaks seriously. I think you'll be able to hear this, Matt. I want to run this audio.
Okay.
We've talked in the past about the firefighter prophet, this creep named Mark Taylor.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a white wing white supremacist religion. Grifter. But he showed up on a program called the MC Files.
Okay.
And he talks about and once again we got another one of these people that hears voices and nobody wants him to take medication.
Yeah. Got a lot of those
because God decided to have a conversation with Mark Taylor about because God is the Almighty Creator of the universe, all powerful, all knowing, sees all, tells nothing. And he had some advice for Donald Trump. And of course, it centers around we'll just let these freaks speak for themselves.
Okay.
The second thing I would say right now is to be praying for the civil unrest, for God to intercede.
I'm sorry, what?
I was going to say this is the proverbial hockey puck.
Yes, this is a hockey puck moment. It absolutely is. Thank you for the reminder. Yes.
Yeah.
So here's firefighter prophet Mark Taylor talking to some goon named Christopher McDonald. You know, woohoo, woohoo. You know, a couple of people that you'd your best bet if you want to be around them is to have a butterfly net handy.
Yeah.
The second thing I would say right now is to be praying for the civil unrest, for God to intercede, because again, that could turn out to get nasty. Because, you know, the general public right now they're in this state where it's like something better happen quick, or some people are going to take matters in their own hands. And the Lord showed me that if they don't act, which I know they are, it would end up being an Ambassador Stevens situation, that they're going to go to Clinton's house, they're going to drag her out in the streets and display her dead body as a trophy if they don't do something. So there's a fine line here on timing, and she won't be the only one that'll happen to if they were not to do this. But there's a fine line in timing. God's got the timing down, so I don't believe any of that's going to happen. But just be praying for the right timing when the arrests go down and for this civil unrest.
You got that? Now, remember, it's all tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
So he is doing this. The American people, through its tax code, are providing this guy welfare to call for the lynching. Because, see, that's what lynching is. It doesn't have to involve a rope. It can be burning, shooting, hanging, beating, dismembering, anything. When you drag someone from their home and you extrajudicially murder them, that's a lynching. And so here's Mark Taylor calling, for all intents and purposes, calling for the lynching of Hillary Clinton. Okay? Now
have long memories.
You take this and you had, I didn't run the whole clip of the goober preacher last night. I don't know if you heard that or not, but the guy that was speaking in tongues.
My God, that guy needs meds.
Well, I couldn't run the whole thing because I was afraid I was going to send the entire Horn Family Community congregation running for the cheap tequila bottle.
There was another 11 minutes.
Yeah, the whole clip was like 10 minutes long, and there was another 4 or 5 minutes. And in that, and I posted it on my Facebook page so that people could hear the whole thing. Because later on, after he gets done with the witches, he starts tying it in with QAnon. And so this guy just did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They are at a fever pitch to get the wink or the nod or whatever from Donald Trump to go out into the streets and begin committing murder. They're itching for it. They're primed for it. They're aching for it. They're yearning for it. And sooner or later, one of the people that listens to this madness is going to act on it, and then another will act on it, and then another will act on it.
Yeah, we've seen that movie before.
The general public right now, they're in this state like where something better happen quick, or some people are going to take matters into their own hands. Well, instead of saying that, why isn't he behind his little microphone on his little webcam saying, don't take matters into your own hands? Where's all that quote about obey the government because the government is ordained of God? Where's that? They're not talking about that now. Because what he's actually trying to do is to stir up and foment and get that murderous urge in motion.
I mean, in a sane world, that would be called incitement, would it not?
Yes, it would.
If I'm not mistaken, given the right circumstances, that would be considered incitement even in a court of law.
But the thing is, you can't put a prior restraint on it, Matt, because you don't necessarily know that's what he's going to do.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, maybe I'm just a little too high-strung, Matt. But I hear stuff like that, and I find it terrifying. Because this means that there's a substantial number of people in this country who want to see an end of civil society, who want to see this country descend into the kind of chaos that makes banana republics banana republics.
Mm-hmm.
And when you factor in the additional reality that these are the people with the majority of the guns in this country, wow.
You got a powder keg, all right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and by the way, I've got some happy news since our recipher.
All right. You were at 145.
Yeah, and we're gonna have to do some dollars and cents.
Oh boy.
James in Illinois just kicked in $20.18.
Oh my. Okay, so that's
which takes us down to 124.82.
Okay.
124.82. Just with the message, just remember, one election at a time.
400 plus that we started with.
Yeah, so we are down to 124.82, and then it comes down again. Thanks to Alma. And it comes down to, oh my God, this is going to get complicated. 104.82. $99.12. No, $99.18.
$99.18. Hey, we're down below the $100 mark.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, $99.18. Thanks to Josh, who just became a new brand new subscriber. It's down to 94.18.
94.18. Okay. You just might make it yet.
Yeah, so $94.18, and if we didn't like the cipher and before, the cipher and from here on out is just going to get bizarre. 94.18. Thank you, James, and thank you, Josh. Thank you very kindly, and thank you, Alma. It is ever so helpful. And that's how this continues to exist.
Let's get a few more people, and let the people listening on the recording, the podcast, do their thing. And,
well, maybe we can knock out the 90. Maybe we can knock out the 90. What was it again?
94.18.
Maybe we can knock out the 94.18. Between now and 27 minutes from now.
Well, let's shoot for that.
And at this point in time, I don't trust myself, and I'm writing down the number.
Yeah. Not a bad idea. Yeah, that's not cheating if you write down along the way.
No. Lee in New York, under the subject line ciphering, said, remembering the line from the Kenny Rogers song The Gambler, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. We all make math errors. You're human too. No, not me. Not you'd be surprised the number of people who think I'm not human, that think I'm maybe one of those a member of the shape-shifting, amorphous, multi-limbed race from Norblap 9.
Oh, well, don't worry about those. Or I guess maybe we should worry about those idiots. I don't know, it's enough to give me a fucking migraine.
Yeah, or to get Mark Twain-esque, give you the fantods.
Yeah. Oh, boy, yeah. It's just... You know, that's why I don't own a TV. And occasionally listen to Rachel and and Lawrence O'Donnell. But that's about it as far as the for-profit media.
I don't have a lot. I still engage in my filthy little habit in the mornings.
Because I just
don't have the patience for Fox and Fiends. And somehow or another, the late night rerun of ESPN Sports Center, it'll take on a little more interest once college football starts. But for now, no.
No. Besides Fox and Fiends, you'd be bouncing off the ceiling.
Yeah, but I tell you what. Now this is
Agnes would be scraping you off the ceiling.
Oh well, we'd be up there together and just trying to peel each other off. She doesn't handle it any better than I do. She's just a better human being. But then again, remember, I'm a space alien. But the Morning Joe thing, I will mention this, and I was chatting on Facebook earlier today with our buddy Michael in Madison, and there's kind of a weird thing been going on over there at that morning homestead. For about 2 weeks now, as best as I can tell, and I tune in about every morning. I don't always catch all 3 hours, but I get close. If Joe is on set, Mika has the day off.
Okay.
If Mika is on set, Joe has the day off. And I think maybe twice I've seen them both be live at the same time, and they're not in the same studio. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm certainly not. I mean, it's just, you notice things like that. And frankly, it was, putting this one on Agnes. She's the one who kept going, "Where's Mika? Where's Joe? Where's Joe? Where's Mika?" And then I began to notice, and it's been going on for about 2 weeks. If a fella didn't know better, he would think that they couldn't stand to be in the same room together. And today, Mika was doing all the fulminating, but Joe was nowhere to be seen.
A marriage made in heaven.
Well, they ain't married yet, and that's the whole thing. I think the marriage was supposed to come off last May, and somehow or another that didn't quite work out.
Maybe
it may be. Oh, what did we say? 94-18.
Yeah.
Okay, we're down to 80-even.
80-even. Okay, so now we can bring it. That takes care of the odd numbers.
And that's thanks to Roberto. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you very, very kindly. That's a tremendous help, especially the part where we knocked out the odd dollars and cents, because that stuff just makes my little head hurt.
Yeah.
But we're down to 80 to finish the evening, and that makes 280 to finish. Yeah, 280 to finish the month and finish the week and the month.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, keep it up, everybody.
Well, Matt, it's good talking to you, my friend, and we'll cut a little room out for see if anybody else wants to jump in.
See if anybody wants to get on.
Awful good hearing from you, and thanks for the mathematical assistance.
There you go. Yeah. That might have helped get those other folks to do their thing. They're not so scared that we were in such a hole that.
Exactly. All right, then. Well, you have yourself a good evening, and let's talk soon.
All right, will do.
Keep them honest up in Humboldt, you hear?
There you go.
Hey, the 6.3 magnitude quake that struck yesterday off the Oregon coast, did that rumble reach you?
No, I didn't feel it. That's a little... I honestly didn't know about it, but that would probably be a good little far north for us to notice it.
Yeah, it was right there at the Juan de Fuca subduction zone, and I've become a worrywart about that ever since I saw an article that a 2015 article that our buddy Chris in Germany reposted from the New Yorker that talked about everything that that isn't ready. Basically from Vancouver all the way down to Northern California in case that one goes, because when it goes, it's a big one.
Yeah, well, that would be, we're about an hour and a half to 2 hours from the Oregon border, and I'm not sure how far up into Oregon that.
And of course, I'm worrying about our buddy Ken out on the Big Island too, because by the time Hurricane Lane is done dumping rain out there, the Big Island could get as much as 4 feet of rain, and already it's running. The flooding has begun and is absolutely torrential. So, Ken, if you get a minute, check in and let us know you're okay. Of course.
Yeah.
I don't know, things like internet maybe and electricity may be taking a whipping right now.
Even if it's not, it probably might be trying to conserve it.
Exactly. Well, Matt, you take care, and we will talk soon.
You bet.
All right.
All right. Will do.
Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That was great. I cannot be trusted to cipher on my own. But anyway, we're down to $80 to go and $280 to finish the month and the week. And let's check in here. Had a note or a series of notes from our buddy Alexander. Who said? Okay. If you want to do PayPal, this is a question from Alexander. If you want to do PayPal, and you don't want to use the button, the easy button that's right there at headon.live, you just go to PayPal and you use bobkincaid@gmail.com. bobkincaid@gmail.com. Thanks for asking, Alexander. But Alexander heard firefighter prophet Mark Taylor calling for the lynching of, or at least predicting the lynching of Hillary Clinton. Because that plays really, really well to that audience, because they sit around masturbating over it. And, of course, Alexander pointed out, the true prophets speak and encourage peace. Taylor's encouraging destruction, mayhem, and endless death. That's the work of Satan, not a man of peace. Thanks, Keith. I think Keith got to the keyboard a little. So we got some dollars and cents to mess with again. We are down to $69.82. Thank you, Keith. $69.82. Writing it on the back of the envelope of the bill I'm going to pay. Minus, we are down, $69.82 finishes the evening, $269.82 finishes the week. Thank you, Keith. Thank you very, very kindly. All right, let's run over and, wait, where'd you go? Are you there? Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Checking for extra messages. If you haven't noticed, if you use Skype, the new Skype interface sucks a mighty wind. Not saying, just saying. So that having been said, let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, and speaking of sucking mighty winds, it's yours truly.
Now.
You'll notice around my neighborhood there's no chrome on any of the trailer hitches, but that'll be in my book.
Yeah,
I know we had a
well. You know, Trump loses Pecker. You can't really top that.
Hey, I saw that and I immediately thought of you. anyway, I know we had a long chat yesterday, but I keep forgetting to ask you a couple of things, and I had a quick audio listening heads up for the Horn family. So if you'll indulge me, I'll do all those three things in rapid succession.
Okay.
Oh, and this might help you. I don't recall you saying on air. You remember when I sent you the punky feather?
Yes.
And tucked in a little love gift in the form of a postal money order?
Yes.
I don't recall your mentioning it, and I don't even know if you mentioned mailed-in contributions.
Yes.
But if you didn't, and it didn't get applied to running tallies and stuff, it may bring you an extra $20 that for
no, it did. It got calculated because, you know, those are the things that Boss Man Wayne sends to the credit union.
Okay, good. Okay. Anyway, that's the first thing. The other thing is, and I've been meaning to ask you this for a long, long time, you've done a number of TV appearances, like on MSNBC. What is the audio quality of the IFB thing in your ear? Is it like a telephone sound, or is it a better quality than that?
I don't want to be critical or anything, and maybe it's different if you've got a better doohickey.
Yeah.
But the generic ones that it's just like a little silicone earbud with some, for lack of a better term, baffles or fins coming from,
yeah,
you know, backwards, so that it'll snug down into the ear canal. It's not great.
Well, I have often,
I mean, the audio,
that,
let's put it this way, the audio that, and let's because we've got a lot of people who are into the tech of it and everything.
Yeah.
This is an Audio Technica pair of headphones, and the audio is dramatic, is crystal clear coming, mm-hmm, from you. I've got some in-ear monitors that, when you keep them clean of goop, are crystal clear, and you're absolutely stone deaf to the world because your ear canal is completely plugged. Those little devices, not so much. And what it is you've got a wireless receiver and a wireless mic, and they're clipped on the back of your back, in the small of your back, on your belt loop or on your,
yeah,
you know, your belt line. And they run up under your shirt and pop out of your collar, and the mic clips to your placket, and the IFB goes in your ear, and you've got a little volume button. They won't let you control your own mic volume, but you can control your own IFB volume. And I usually wind up cranking that thing up, because there's nothing more frustrating than hear parts of the,
yeah,
estrogen.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen a couple of times, and you feel like you're losing your mind. And you just hope that when you say Peoria, that you're answering the question that was put to you.
Yeah. Well, I've often wondered it, and you're the only person that I, you know, personally have a connection with who has had that experience, so I thought I'd ask.
And frankly, if it was something I was going to be doing all the time, instead of having one of those little silicone hickeys, I would go to a professional, somebody who fits, because the companies also sell the devices. And you can buy them on the market anyway, but what you do is you go and you get an impression taken of your inner ear, mm-hmm, and then you get an in-ear monitor made, and that way you know you're guaranteed to get good audio.
Yeah. Yeah, custom fitted.
Yeah, I don't care so much about hearing me, but I damned well want to hear what everybody else says.
Yeah. Okay, the other question, when you were down in New Orleans, part of the purpose was to bring new people into the tent.
That was the theory, yes.
It would be a nifty idea, as you hear from them via calls or emails or whatever, to mention that, because, you know, we are a welcoming bunch.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
That might be a good thing to do, and, you know, for what it's worth. Let's see. Now, the heads up. Late last year and early this year, Slate Magazine did a weekly podcast on the Watergate affair, adventure. And it was like eight or nine parts, and it was quite well done. And starting a couple of weeks ago, they have begun another 8 or 9 part podcast. And the feature on Slate Magazine is Slow Burn, S-L-O-W-B-U-R-N. And this, the topic this time around is the Clinton impeachment. And it, they get a new episode every Wednesday. I have yet to begin listening to this current series. But if it's as well done as the one on Watergate, it will be, because I fancy myself a Watergate aficionado and expert. And even I learned some stuff that I hadn't been aware of on that whole mess. So they dig deep, and it's free to listen to it. You've got to listen to a couple of commercials, but it's on, let's see if I've got this right, slate.com. And if you actually, if you just Google Slow Burn, it'll bring you right up to the page for the current podcast and also the old episodes from the one on Watergate. And anyway, we might, the one about the Clinton impeachment may prove to be instructive and informative in today's world. I know that a lot of Democrats are avoiding the I word.
Well, and there's another aspect to that, and there's an example coming out of it. Whether Clinton or Nixon can be instructive in the present dynamic,
mm-hmm.
Is, as far as I can tell, up in the air, because where impeachment is concerned, we've developed a history of making it up as we go along. Every one of them is dealt with on an ad hoc basis. We don't really have rules for it. There was Andrew Johnson, then there was Richard Nixon, then there was Bill Clinton, and each one was handled differently.
Yeah, and we're given so little to go on in terms of, other than the bare bones, you've got to wing it.
Right, and so what you're finding out with, so the second most powerful member of the Senate of the United States is a creep from Texas by the name of John Cornyn. No. Now, John Cornyn was a prosecutor. He was a trial court judge. I think he was an appellate court judge in Texas. And somebody stuck a microphone in his face and said, Senator Cornyn, are you concerned about what Donald, do you agree with Donald Trump's statement that it should be illegal for people charged with crimes to flip on another person charged with a crime? Because, of course, that's another thing that he babbled in the last 24 hours in an interview with Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. He said that it should be illegal. I've watched him flip for 20 years. Flipping should be illegal. Now, the very heart and soul of prosecution, Scott, is using leverage against one defendant to get a bigger defendant. I mean, it's nothing, and it's not even unique to the United States, as far as I know.
Well, you start at the edges and you work your way in.
Precisely. So here's this. So with that statement having been made by the President of the United States, the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States, the second most powerful man in the Senate of the United States, who has a career as a prosecutor and as a judge, who had arguably signed off on any number of plea deals in which people agreed to cooperate, having been asked the question, he responded, I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm not sure. Or something to that effect.
Yeah, which is rather telling.
Well,
a couple of levels.
If that doesn't tell you that they're going to move heaven and earth to protect this man, because 90% of the Republican Party agrees with him, then we aren't listening very closely. So I only offer that as counterpoint to the issue of whether anything about any previous impeachment can be instructive. I mean, look at precious Lindsey Graham, that clip from him that I played earlier this evening. Now, if you go back in time and you chloroform that Lindsey Graham and drag him to 2018, there will be a riot inside the Republican Party if he says what he said in 1999 about a circumstance that is about a million billion jillion times worse than what he was dealing with in 1999.
Well, and by inference, that's what I meant by instructive. There is something to be learned from the way that the opposition handled things in the late 90s versus the way that they're mishandling things today. I think it was the Post had an item. You know, especially with Cohen and Manafort both going down in a non-trailer hitch kind of way, the Post said words to the effect, impeachment should be on the table, and it probably could be now in the wake of Manafort and Cohen, and who knows who else next.
Well, no, but
we don't have the mechanism in the place where impeachment begins.
Well, let's take a look at two things. One, consider the and this is a rough approximation of the words of Paul Ryan. Miss Scarlett, I don't know nothing about impeaching no president.
No.
Okay. That's Paul Ryan. Secondly, and this is linguistic more than legal, I suppose, or constitutional or political, but with any president, and I say this because it exists in the Constitution, and if there is anything in American law and politics that is always on the table, it's the Constitution. The entire framework of our civil society is predicated on the fact that everything that we do politically and legally must not offend the Constitution, whether it's the Interstate Commerce Clause or how we go about appointing and confirming judges, and yes, even impeachment. So I would like...
It's the framework and the playing field under which we operate.
Right. So I would like to introduce a concept here, Scott.
All right.
I don't want to hear any more about whether impeachment is or is not on the table. And I don't mean from you. I'm not criticizing or castigating you. If the Constitution is what we keep saying that it is, then no matter the president, no matter the party, no matter the time, impeachment is always on the table.
Yeah, and the reason for that is if you go to Washington, to 9th and Pennsylvania, and climb the stairs and visit the archives and look at the original document encased in glass, you'll notice the headline says Constitution. It does not say Constitution Buffet, where you take your tray down the line and pick and choose your favorite goodies.
Well done. Thank you.
Yes. Am I right?
No, you are. Because impeachment is always on the table because impeachment is that mechanism which is supposed to keep presidents and other high-level appointees and nominees and confirmees in line. The threat of being removed from office and forbidden from future service is supposed to be a great big sword of Damocles that hangs over the head not just of the president, but of every justice of the Supreme Court, for instance, and every justice of the circuit court, and every federal district court justice, and every U.S. magistrate.
And it's a useful mechanism to preserve our system, to preserve our nation, to preserve our well-being, and to safeguard ourselves from going down a bad way.
Now let me also offer, and perhaps I've said this before, but we have, and I think you know what I mean when I say that something has become stylized. In other words, it's no longer active and vibrant. It's a form. It's become a sort of a platonic ideal. I think we've done that to the concept of impeachment. And yeah, by that, and by that, I mean, we have made impeachment a thing whereby you can't do it in less than 2 years. Aficionado of Watergate that you are, how long did impeachment take for Richard Nixon? Now, and Grant, understanding that he was never formally impeached, but the articles were drafted.
Well, the original offense of the break-in at the Watergate office building happened on June 17th, 1972. He did not announce his resignation until August 8th, 1974, effective the following day at noon. So what is that? That's two years?
Right. So, and I want to go back to...
The House Judiciary Committee didn't get impeachment proceedings underway until July, I believe, of 74.
Right, but there had been hearings prior to that.
Yeah, there had been, the previous year, there had been the Senate Watergate Committee.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
And so what I'm saying, when I say it's become stylized, it takes too long to... The way we understand it, it takes too long. Unfortunately, there aren't enough of us who are aficionados of the impeachment of Andrew Johnson. I need to research it. I don't know how long that took from beginning to the trial in the Senate, whereby he survived by one vote.
Offhand, I don't recall the grounds for impeachment. I mean, he was a horrible vice president and then president.
Yeah, Lincoln should have left Hannibal Hamlin in, but we're not going to go down that because that's just that there's too many off ramps on that road.
Yeah.
But it takes too long to get it done. So, for instance, in the course of conversing with you, I'm going to bring in something that that Alexander said just a moment ago. And I'm going to take a little bit of, I'm gently going to take issue with it. Alexander said, Nancy Pelosi is not going to do the right thing where Trump impeachment is concerned. She's a coward like all too many Democrats today. And there is a strong and credible argument to be made in that regard. But it is not, I don't think it is settled. Wait. This is a struggle for me, so please bear with me, Scott.
Okay.
On the one hand, I think it's settled that when a president flagrantly commits felonies, he has put himself in the realm of impeachment. And if it takes, but on the other hand, if it takes 3 years or 2 years or a year and a half to deal with a felonious president, then you move into that realm where justice delayed is justice denied.
Mm-hmm.
Then the politics come into it. And this is the kind of question that Nancy Pelosi, and I realize that there is kind of a cottage industry in hating Nancy Pelosi right now. I don't agree with everything she does, but I look at the way she has held her caucus together and kept them firmly in opposition to Trump since January 20th, 2017. And I can't think of too many minority leaders from the Democratic Party who could do something like that. So that is a Herculean accomplishment.
Especially with House elections being, what, 5 weeks away?
Right.
Looming and pending.
So maybe I'm wrong.
They tend to get out of groupthink and into self-preservation as the days grow shorter.
Right, and but you also have to. I mean, I don't think it. I think it's unfair, Scott, to look at it solely as a matter of self-preservation. I think it is an honest question that you ask about the good of the nation. And I'm not one of those people who gets all dewy like Ben Bradley and Katherine Graham did back during Iran-Contra, saying things like,
America can't stand to go through another impeachment crisis.
I think our Constitution is robust, and I think it's resilient. And I think the American people can stand a lot more than what paternalistic multimillionaire members of the for-profit media declare.
Yeah.
But having said that, the question becomes one of if a brand new, let's assume that blue wave, let's assume there's a Democratic majority in the House on January the whatever when they're sworn in, and the first thing they do is impeach Donald Trump. We're gonna go against everything that I just said. It's not gonna take a year and a half. By God, we're gonna look at the plea deal. We're gonna say he did it with his little hatchet, and we're gonna pass a bill of impeachment. It's gonna go through a special committee like shit through a goose. It's gonna hit the floor of the House. And Speaker Pelosi is gonna maintain the same control over her caucus that she has thus far maintained. They're all gonna vote to impeach. It's gonna go to the Senate, and what's it gonna do in the Senate?
Well, it depends.
Die. It's going to die in the Senate.
Well, earlier you were talking about a number of current Democratic senators who are up for consideration in a few weeks, holding on to their seats and maybe even snagging a few currently.
Yeah, that's to get to 51 Democrats.
And where does that put us in terms of the question that you posed?
16 Republicans away.
Yeah. Well, see, that's where events have to play a role in terms of what bona fide, irrefutable stuff that Mueller can come up with. And you got to remember that before this thing is over, yeah, there's going to be a lot of, not since the hotcake breakfast the day before Ash Wednesday have I seen the prospect of big flipping.
I think that's a possibility, but I still say that, you know, if you're going to ask me to take a fin and put it on one on yes or no at a casino, impeachment dies in the Senate because it requires a super majority.
Yeah, well,
Alexander asked the question, if the impeachment process takes so long, then why have it? Well, the impeachment process was not designed to take so long.
Yeah, because if the situation is readily apparent, you behave accordingly, right? I mean,
and also we're talking about a very young nation's constitution that did not set out specific rules for how to have an impeachment. But instead, we wind up with impeachments. You know, the first impeachment takes place 411 years. There we are with the ciphering. We're adding in scores now. Four score and 11 years after the nation was conceived in liberty and yada, 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 like Lincoln said at Gettysburg. And even by then, they had developed arcane rules of procedure that dictated how the process went. And that's what I meant when I said that every impeachment is an ad hoc process. Every time it is new. Love blooms anew. One love is not like the, and neither is one impeachment. Okay.
Right.
And so consequently, because of the arcana of the rules of procedure in the House and the Senate, it takes so long. In the main, it is the arcana of the rules of the House that makes it take so long to get from we might need to impeach this fucker to this fucker is impeached. And so it's not a matter of constitutionality and why have this thing. It's a matter of the concept of impeachment terrifies the government. Because the one thing you're doing, and there's no getting around this, okay? It was true of Clinton, true of Nixon, true of Andrew Johnson. Well, no, it was not true of Andrew Johnson. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, because he wasn't convicted.
No, because he wasn't elected. The one thing you're doing with an impeachment is you are seeking to disenfranchise a significant segment or a significant percentage of the voters of the United States of America.
Yeah, you're undoing a bona fide election.
Yeah.
But now, then again, assassinations do that also.
That's true, and we don't like them, do we?
No, we don't. We don't.
But the other thing is, are you if in the case of Julius Geiser, are you undoing the results of a fair and free election?
Well, there's that question.
I would submit that you are not. You're actually doing justice. But is justice done? See, this is why it gets so complicated. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But
no, you're not. You're not. You raise valid points.
But so is justice done if you remove the crooked president and you let the crooked vice president come in and take office?
Yeah, well, it's the one dragon that we know versus 10 dragons that we don't know.
And what happens? Although, and what happens to a dirty, crooked, wounded president who is impeached and survives trial in the Senate and then runs for re-election? What happens to him?
Well, based on the mindset, so-called, of his adherents and his fans and groupies, it benefits him because we didn't aim right. We shot, we fired, and we missed.
And what happens to the Congress that did that to him?
Well, they apply that lesson. And make no mistake, I mean, I'm not a dewy-eyed optimist, you know, and you know, with my sparkle fart ponies romping in the clover, in terms of our chances in the House, I mean, in the Senate, you know, because there's a number of variables that are yet to be decided. On the other hand, though, and this doesn't work just in terms of impeachment or whatever, but it could work in terms of the upcoming midterms. There's a saying, the entire universe conspires to assist you. Now, that sounds rather cosmic, but I think it is a fact of experience and nature that commitment is the key in any future outcome. To the extent that you are sold on the notion of behaving in a manner that's consistent with the outcome that you wish to achieve, commitment is the very first thing that you've got to have. So a lot of stars are going to have to align, at least in terms of the Senate and everything else for that matter. But step one, not getting ahead of ourselves, step one is to show up in irrefutable numbers come November and retake the House and do our damnedest to gain.
Right. And that's what I meant when I said I'm overthinking it. Because it's like James in Illinois said a few minutes ago when he kicked in 2018, one election at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Bingo.
And, you know, if the only reason we're going to have a blue wave is because we've got our sights set on impeachment, then that's our fault. Okay. Because there are a million other things that we need to take the House and the Senate back for.
Exactly.
To protect the next 150 years of American jurisprudence by keeping Brett Kavanaugh off the goddamn court, for starters.
Yeah, and
if we can stop that process. Remember, that he's going to have hearings on September the 4th, whether we like it or not.
Right. Okay, and I know we're over time here, but let me just close with this. It may not take impeachment to rid ourselves of this meddlesome twerp. I'm reminded of an old joke about the sailor who contracted all manner of nasty nether region maladies to the point where his member was discolored and misshapen and painful and throbbing, and he had gone to place after place, doctor after doctor, to seek remedy and relief. None of them could treat him adequately, and it just got worse down below his navel. So he finally went to an Asian practitioner of Asian medicine, had to go halfway around the world to do it, consulted with the guy, and told the doctor, the Asian doctor, of what had happened thus far. and said that everybody recommended, they couldn't help him, and the only thing they could recommend was to cut it off. And the wise Asian doctor said, ah, no, there will be no need to cut your member off. In about 12 hours, it will fall off on its own. And I think Trump may put himself, no, seriously, I seriously think, given the you know, the crazed rat in the tin shithouse that we have in Trump, that even without impeachment, he will undo himself, because he's programmed to undo himself. And that may not be a popular notion, but if you look at this guy's track record, that's the only future that is open to him, ultimately. And you were mentioning earlier, he probably fancies himself, after he leaves, of being a latter-day statesman.
Yeah, he wants Nixon. He wants to be afforded the sainthood status of Reagan, is what he wants. But I think there may be truth in that, and maybe it's a matter of the sufficient application of pressure, because if it becomes clear that he is going to be the subject of indictment after indictment after indictment, and that because they are also within his orbit, that it's going to touch Don Jr. and Eric and Precious Ivanka.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's never going to get any better, and his life is going to be a living hell. See, Bill Clinton, for all we criticize him, Bill Clinton reveled in the fight, and he was smart enough to engage in the fight, okay? Mm-hmm. And he enjoyed taking the case to the people. And on the day he was impeached, he had a 76% approval rating?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it was crazy. On the other hand, Trump will never have, I think he won't have that. But the other side of that coin is that they've said, well, you know, the Republicans paid a terrible price. No, they didn't. They didn't lose the majority in 2000. They didn't lose the presidency in 2000. Well, I mean, they did, but they didn't. And so consequently, if he were a smart man, I would be having that conversation with Mike Pence and say, look, you know, we're not going to say what you're going to do, but we know that if I let you be president, there's a thing you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to do the thing. And Mike says, in the name of Jesus, yes, I will. Hallelujah. Amen. And that's how you get rid of Trump. And then Pence is absolutely beatable, maybe, in 20. So I guess we've rolled over time a little bit, but I guess, yeah. What I'm trying to say is that it's not as clear cut as what we would like it to be. I mean, if I had my druthers, I'd like to take a Brett Kavanaugh and just gently lead him along, because this fucker's not a trial lawyer. He's a Federalist Society slug.
Yeah.
And anybody else that wants to make the argument that you can't indict a sitting president, I'd just like to lead him along ever so gently and let him explain why, the national security and the president's a very busy man, you know, he can't be bothered with a blah, 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 blah. And then get to the point, and then just say, so what you're telling us, oh noble pleader, is that we can take that notion that no man is above the law in the United States of America and throw it in the shitter.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're telling us, that the president of the United States, no matter what crime he commits, is actually above the law. Because as Lindsey Graham reminded us, it was not about whether he broke the law or not. It was not about whether it was criminal or not. It is just a matter of cleansing the office.
Jeez. Well, let's prevail.
I mean, did a little pissant fucker like Lindsey Graham ever dream for a moment that shit would be coming back like a pie in the face?
No, because I don't think anyone ever envisioned having someone like Trump in the executive mansion. I mean, I've said this jokingly after he was elected. Even fairly moderate experience with heavy-duty hallucinogens did not prepare me for this eventuality of surrealness. You know?
Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit.
But anyway, one more plug for Slow Burn. Just Google Slow Burn and you'll find it. And for what it's worth, listen to those podcasts, because if nothing else, they may not be totally applicable, but you'll learn stuff.
Well,
which is always good.
Education, as the line goes in Dangerous Liaisons, is never a waste.
No. Good stuff, Bob. You're, as always, I love the way you engage in these conversations, because, well, that's what we do. We do conversation radio here.
Precisely. That's why we call it what we call it.
Hopefully it'll be fundraising free in the coming weeks. So, you know, we should dance. Just get up and dance.
Dance. That's D-A-I-N-T-Z.
Yeah, there you go.
Dance.
All right, man.
All right, see you, Scott. Bye now.
Take care, Bob. Bye-bye.
And so we ran over, but I want to make sure that we get caught up, because I got some hellacious ciphering to do here. Laurel said, I'm in the middle of a major engine overhaul. Yes, it matters that much. And so that took us down to 4982. And let's see. Then Cynthia took us down to 40.83. Thank you, Cynthia. So $40.83. And I've got a check here. I don't mean a check. I mean, I've got a... And then Alexander, who posed such good questions, took us to $30.83. Did I get that right, or did I screw that up? But yeah, $30.83. So we have reached almost the entire fundraising goal, and I don't know what will happen overnight. We've got $200 tomorrow and $30.83 tonight, so we've got a fighting chance. I thank you all very much for joining in. I thank you so much for your help. If we were not facing a no-broadcast situation, I would not have brought the urgency to it that I have. I thank you all who keep this program on the air, who enable the conversations that you all say matter so much to you, and the little haven of sanity that this place provides. I thank you so very much. I thank all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little program. Thank you to all the people, our all-volunteer staff, who make this all go, whether it be our moderators in the chat room, Steve and Sparky, our news ninjas, Brother Deacon Asa at HeadOn.live, John Fox in Australia, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you all. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.